yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Hello. It's Wednesday, May the 9th, and you've tuned into the Mike Malloy Show. We had a little technical problem with the typical Malloy open music, so Nancy Sinatra was kind enough to step in, no pun intended, and let us know about them boots that are made for walking. Lots to talk about here on the Malloy program tonight. Got some guests coming up as well. Cindy Sheehan will join us at the bottom of this hour, talk about a march. The mother of marches taking place this Monday in Washington, D.C., and hopefully around the world. We'll hear all about that from Cindy. At the top of the next hour, we're going to be speaking with Michael Otterman. He's written a book called American Torture, From the Cold War to Abu Ghraib and Beyond. Should be a fascinating interview on the history of the practice by our government. RCIA of torturing people. Bunch of stories out there in the news I'd like to touch on briefly. The Vice President Dick Cheney was over in Baghdad today, speaking to some folks over there, trying to put pressure on the Iraqi government to move ahead, to move forward, to get the oil sharing deal together. Dick Cheney's also in the news, and this one's, it's a rumor, basically. And I normally don't report on rumors, but since this one involves Dick Cheney, I will forgo my usual caution about rumors. Rumor has it that ABC News, as many of you remember, last Friday night, Brian Ross of ABC was going to present this blockbuster story about the D.C. madam. And apparently they were going to name names. Apparently some prominent former CEO was on the list. Well, today, and at the last minute, ABC News kind of dropped it. And they didn't, it wasn't all of a sudden quite as explosive as they had promoted it. And they backed off of the names. Well, rumors out there circulating today that the big name that they didn't mention, the former CEO, was former Halliburton CEO, current Vice President Dick Cheney. And because of pressure from the White House, that story was pulled by ABC News. Now, again, just a rumor. Hard to substantiate it. Obviously, as the case evolves, we'll be hearing more about it. One of the more interesting takes I saw on this was actually from Anna Marie Cox, as many of you know, as Wong Ket, a prominent blogger out there. And I'm just going to read the last paragraph of her post on Cheney. I'll have to leave a word or two out. But so she kind of lays out the whole story of the Cheney connection and says, there, are you happy now? Didn't think so. Do you know why we're underwhelmed by this rumor? Because even if it is a fact, which it probably is, there's no way it would have any impact on Cheney's career. This is a draft-dodging half-human war criminal with a pregnant lesbian daughter who tells senators to F themselves and shoots his own friends in the face. Ordering an out-call hooker is positively innocent compared to the well-known things Cheney does every day. So that's what we got on the Cheney rumor. A lot of other stories out there concerning Cheney over there in Iraq. I also want to give kudos to a website. There's a chat room I was over on. As many of you know, Sarge of Mississippi is here in Phoenix now. And I guess it's a chat room that he frequents a lot. A fellow down in Mobile, Alabama, I believe it's Mobile, has a website called democracyinteractive.com. And it's sort of a website chat room, political stuff, obviously, Democrats. I've sort of popped in and said hello a couple times. And from what Sard says, a lot of great people down there, part of another Southern progressive, so it deserves your support. www.democracyinteractive.com. Check out that site if you would. Also want to plug Zogby. I do a show every Friday with John Zogby, 6 p.m. East Coast time on the Nova M Radio Network. It's called The Pulse of the Nation with John Zogby. Essentially what we do is look at the whole business of polling. We kind of open it up. Callers get to call in, ask about how polls are done. We look at some of the current polls that the Zogby International Group is looking at. Just kind of talk our way through some of the politics of the day. But it's not limited to politics. But anyway, it's a really fun program. I've been enjoying doing it quite a bit. I co-host with John Zogby. And one of the other things we do at the end of each program, we put out a poll question for our listeners to respond to. And if you go over to www.zogby.com and click on The Pulse of the Nation, you can get in there and answer the week's poll question. And in addition, they also go out and they poll 3,000 Americans at random. And then at the end of the program, we kind of get to look at the question, look at sort of how our listeners tie in with the rest of the nation in terms of assessing the questions of the day. So if you haven't yet, go check out www.zogby.com. Click on The Pulse of the Nation. There's also a thepulseofthenation.com website where you can check that out. That's still in development. It's not a lot of juice over there yet, but we're building that one. So do check that out. Also, some good news from my home state of Massachusetts. The governor of Massachusetts put together a proposal to spend $1 billion on biotechnology over the next 10 years, aiming to fill a federal funding shortfall because of Bush's opposition to stem cell research, basically looking to challenge California's dominance in that area. So, hats off to newly elected Governor Deval Patrick for earmarking or attempting to put forward a plan to put $1 billion into stem cell research back in Massachusetts. That will certainly be a great thing for our country to move that research and that science forward, but also a great thing for the state of Massachusetts because of the jobs that it will create and its benefit to the economy there. So I salute Deval Patrick. Thank you. There is also a move among Democrats to deauthorize the Iraq War. Now, you heard this was a Hillary Clinton, Robert Byrd plan in the Senate. The House is moving in that direction as well. And they are essentially trying to deauthorize, go back to that resolution from end of 2002 that gave Bush the authority to get that war in Iraq started, and withdraw that authorization. Now, again, going back in time, you may call it, what real purpose does it have? Well, one thing it has is it changes the dynamic of the debate. They can no longer say the Democrats authorized this war, the Democrats are behind it, it's their fault. No, the Democrats are making very public their desire to not be connected with this war anymore. And again, I applaud that move. I hope they're able to pull it off. I have to say I'm not at all excited about the current plan to try and please the president further by, giving him a temporary funding thing through July where he's going to come back and give a report card. I don't think they should do anything at this point. They put a bill before the president. They gave him all the money he wanted in his supplemental bill because he failed to include the money he needed to plan ahead in the 2007 budget. So they set up to give him all the money he wanted, and he vetoed it. End of story, as far as I'm concerned. Fine, he vetoed it. Let it sit there. He needs the money, he'll come back. Why are they trying to bend over backwards to accommodate the president? I have no idea. Let's take a break. Come back, we'll take a few phone calls. At the bottom of the hour, Cindy Sheehan's going to join us. Top of the hour, Michael Ottoman, American Torture, from the Cold War to Aubrey Graham and beyond. Be right back.
they want to hear some American music. American music. They want to hear that sound right from the USA.
Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Malloy this evening and throughout this week. We are streaming at NovaMradio.com. If you'd like to join this evening's conversation, 1-800-989-1480. The phone lines are open, and it will be for the majority of the program. I got a couple guests coming up, one of which is Cindy Sheehan at the bottom of this hour. Top of next hour, Michael Otterman, author of American Torture, From the Cold War to Abu Ghraib and Beyond. Should be an interesting discussion, but let's take a few phone calls while we get the time. Bill in Phoenix, you're up first.
Hey, Jeff.
How you doing, buddy?
All right. You know, we've spoke about America's promise and dream,
mm-hmm.
but the one component of America we didn't speak of is American spirit and what feeds the American spirit. And what mm-hmm. feeds the American spirit is the first part of our nation's name, United.
Yep.
Our poor spirit is so, so hungry right now. That I'm going to ask people to feed the spirit and put a little pin and some red over their heart space. I'm not going to say anything more than that. I wanted to ask Cindy how she heard about it, and I'm hoping that it's because Jesse handed her a pin. Perhaps she'll ask her for me.
I hope so. We'll see how much time I get to talk with her. I have no idea what, you know, it's always, you get a phone number and you hope you get her when they say she's ready.
I know.
But, you know, yeah. So appreciate your call today, brother.
All right, kid.
Take care.
See you in the street.
You sure will.
Yeah, I know.
Let's go to Matthew over there in Bedford, Texas. Welcome, Matthew.
Hey, Jeff.
How you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing all right, as much as I can be, playing poker. Keeps my mind off of all the stuff that's going on in the world. Well, Cheney, wow. He, you know, I think that whenever Cheney gets bored, he goes off and threatens other countries.
Right. Yeah.
That's just his thing. I mean, outside of his hobbies of eating babies and, you know, hunting down innocent people with a shotgun, you know, I mean, what more could you want to do when you're Dick Cheney?
Yeah, well, did you hear they overheard us saying to kick the press out of their meeting? Did you hear that?
No, I haven't heard that.
Kick out the press. Yeah, apparently they had some meeting with him. He's like, this is just a photo splash, and then we kick out the press. And then apparently a few minutes after his little comments about how much progress was going on, an explosion struck inside the green zone right near where he was speaking.
You know, that just goes to show how incompetent Al-Qaeda really is. Because, I mean, all these people are like, oh, we got to fight them over here unless we fight them over, or we have to fight them over there unless we fight them over here. I mean, Cheney's in their country and they can't even touch him.
Right.
That's pretty pathetic. I mean, we kind of put these Al Qaeda people at this high. They can do anything. I mean, look, if they can't touch a vice president in their own country, who probably his aides hate his living guts,
right,
then they really can't do anything. But, I mean, it's just something that really is kind of it's not making me sick, but, I mean, it's just kind of making me give dark looks at these administration. I mean, especially in his lame duck era.
Yeah.
Because what's Bush doing? He's going over to red states for photo ops.
Right.
What's Cheney doing? He's going around the world threatening other countries. I mean, this is just so reprehensible. I don't remember Clinton ever doing this. I don't remember any Democrat doing this. This is a Republican trait, because
right.
almost every other Republican president really, and vice president, this is what they do whenever they're looking down.
And like most bullies, that means they're really cowards. So, yeah.
Hey, love to hear. I'm really looking forward to hearing Cindy Sheehan. Give her my love.
I sure will.
And the author about the, I mean, torture. I mean, this has to get out there.
Right.
I mean, we cannot afford going around this world, going around in this particular political climate with our heads in the sand. I mean, you're having really good guests on, And, you know, here's hoping that, you know, they really tell us stuff that the world needs to know. Well, of course they will. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, the book is pretty fascinating. They sent me an advanced copy of the book. I didn't get to read the whole thing, but I was kind of skimming through, read a couple of the chapters, and, God, it's just chilling. But anyway, I don't want to preclude too much of what we're going to talk about later. But, yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. Hey, before you go, Matthew, give a plug for that website of yours.
It's 2texasliberals.blogspot.com, the number 2 Texas Liberals.
All right. Thanks,
and
buddy.
It's run by myself, Matt, and my friend Devin.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for all your work.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
It's the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M. When we get back, we'll have Cindy Sheehan on the phone, I hope. Talk to you then. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. Joined by a very special guest for this segment, Cindy Sheehan joins us from, I believe you're in Washington, D.C. Is that correct, Cindy?
No, actually, I'm in Chico, California. I'm going to head to D.C. on Sunday.
Now, you decided to come on the air to talk with us today about the Mother of a March you're helping to organize in D.C. and all around the world. Can you tell our listeners a little about what you have in store?
Well, we're going to meet at at the White House in Lafayette Park. We're going to rally, have speeches and some entertainment, and we're going to march to the Congress, and we're going to demand that Congress do something to end the war and hold George Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of the administration accountable.
Right.
And we're trying to find out where Nancy Pelosi lives in D.C., and we're going to go over to her house and have a vigil in front of her house. She's the major obstacle to holding George Bush and Dick Cheney accountable to impeachment. So we just want to show her that, you know, we elected her and the rest of the Democrats to change things, not to keep things the same.
Mm-hmm. You know, I did a little research, and I found out Mother's Day has actually quite a history in the peace movement.
Right. Well, it was started by Julia Ward Howe.
Right. Who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic during the Civil War? Oddly enough, yeah.
Right, and she started it as an anti-war event, and she wrote a very powerful call to mothers to not let our children march off to war.
Right.
And it is very powerful. Mother's Day is very meaningful. It's not just a Hallmark holiday.
Right. It was originally called Mother's Day for Peace. Was the full name of it? Yeah.
Right, and it's so very, empty for me now since I buried my son. And, you know, I do have 3 surviving children, and they're very important to me. But, you know, without Casey, it doesn't seem the same anymore.
Yeah, I understand. You have a website up, thecampcaseypeaceinstitute.org, folks. If you want to find out all about the march and the specifics of it, that's a great place to check out and learn more about it. I don't know, timelines, benchmarks, vetoes, compromises going back and forth. Are you as frustrated as I am, the fact that there's been so little movement on the war since this, what we thought was a historic election back in November?
Well, Well, I'm super frustrated. I've been in D.C. many times. I was there during the election.
Mm-hmm.
I was there when the Democrats were sworn into, you know, the majority on January 4th. I've been there several times since then, working on these issues. And it's very, you know, discouraging how slowly the progress is going. You know, we see baby steps. So they're baby steps in the right direction, but they're just, you know, George Bush told them he would veto the bill.
Right.
You know, why do they keep giving him money?
Right.
That's what I don't understand.
that's been my contention all along. Once he said no to the money they offered him, why do they keep trying to appease him at this point? Just say, well,
right, exactly.
come back when you're ready to talk, you know?
I
don't understand it. And again, you know, it's all about time. Now the Republicans are saying, well, September, and every day that goes by, another mother in this country and another mother in Iraq is burying a child. And the look, you know, for every day, our party wastes, or my party wastes, getting this thing resolved, it's just more death, more injuries, more carnage.
Well, we can't wait. And like you pointed out, it's too late for so many people. And, you know, every day we wait, it becomes, you know, too late for other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, in September is also very crafty because that's when the presidential election starts.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a political situation for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats, you know, have to just stand up and say, this isn't our war. This is George Bush's war. I mean, Nancy Pelosi was part of the, you know, the caucus that didn't vote to give George Bush the authority.
Mm-hmm.
I know she wants the troops to come home, but they have to say, we're not going to lose this war. This war was lost before we even invaded.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to be the ones that have the courage and the integrity to end it.
It's just frustrating that they don't recognize that the majority, 70% of the American people want this thing ended. And I don't understand why they lack the political courage at this point to step up and really force an end to it.
I don't know. You know, they have the will of the American public behind them, and they will be very, they'll be heroes if they do this. And whoever, Dennis Kucinich has already introduced impeachment resolution against Dick Cheney, and, you know, he's not getting any support in Congress. Just two other Congress people signed on to it.
Right.
And, you know, for the Democrats to be playing the same political games as the Republicans do is very disappointing.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, I think a lot of them are in some ways counting their chickens about this next election, that all we have to do is stay quiet, and people are just get more and more fed up with the Republicans. You know, they got to prove that they're going to do some things differently. And so far, you know, I'm happy about the oversight, but I'm not happy they haven't been moving faster and more directly on the war.
Well, the oversight, I think, has been for very, I don't want to say meaningless things, because, you know, there are things that they've investigated that have been very important, but, you know, they're not getting down into the meat and potatoes of the lies and the war profiteering and the racketeering, because, you know, many of them are just as complicit as the Republicans.
Yeah, I hear it. Hey, Cindy, you mind taking a phone call with me?
Not at all.
Okay, let's go to Pam in Phoenix. Pam, you're up first.
Oh, hi, Jeff, and hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Thank you for all you do. I keep you and your loved ones and Casey's soul in my prayers.
Oh, yep. I appreciate it.
Well, I really, we all treasure you.
Thank
everything
you.
You do. But, you know, my question, Cindy, has to do with, there are liberals, even liberals in leadership roles, who say that the way to end this war is to start a draft. And I would really like to hear your thoughts on that. And God bless you. I will hang up and listen.
Thank you, Pam. Well, my thoughts are that I'm against forced conscription.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people don't talk about what we already have, a backdoor draft and a poverty draft in this country. And the people who will be drafted, it'll never be fair. It'll never be equitable. It'll always be the children of the middle or lower middle class or poor children who have to pay for the crimes of people in this administration. I
agree, though. I think that if there was a draft, that that would really activate people, get people out on the street, but it's too high of a price, I think,
right,
to pay for getting people active. And I just don't want to put any more of our young people in the hands of these warmongers. And, you know, it'll never happen because the neocons have been very, you know, clever about this war. They've kept it as far away from the American public as they can,
right,
with, you know, not raising taxes, not having a shared kind of feeling of sacrifice, mm-hmm, not allowing the coffins to be shown coming home. And I think in August of 05, when we were at Camp Casey, that was the first time that the general American public saw the face of suffering and what this war has done to people and what it's cost people.
Yeah, it is sad. It has been a very, as you point out, very sort of a sinister plot to kind of keep this war, keep the sacrifice to a minimum among the American people, that it's not a shared sacrifice. The fact that there are huge tax cuts in the middle of a war is just, I don't think that's ever happened in recorded history.
It never has happened.
Yeah, and it's just remarkable that again, so few people are asked to sacrifice for this war. Hey, I want to try and get one more call in. Claudia in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Claudia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Yes, I hope I can be rational. I am so upset. Something that hasn't been covered in the news today was that yesterday the Iraqi parliament voted. And they voted to, they want, I can't remember the exact count, but it was 140-something out of 230-something parliamentary members voted. They want America to take the troops out of their country.
Mm-hmm.
And this hasn't been covered in the news. To me, that sounds like the biggest news. And I was listening to Hardball earlier this evening, and they were talking about how outrageous it was that the parliament was going to take a summer break and
2 months. Yeah.
And Cheney went there to talk them out of it. And the fact of the matter is, they've already announced they're not going to. But that was what all the outrage was on the news program, and nobody's talking about the fact. And so most people don't even understand this has happened.
Interesting. Yeah, I heard Randy Rhodes mention it on her program today, but that's the only mention I've heard anywhere in the media or in print.
I also saw it on, I get a lot of email from Media Matters and mm-hmm. from several news outlets, and it has been reported, so I believe that it is true, but nobody's reporting it. You know, that should be the news of the hour, you know, that They've said they've taken polls of the citizens, but this is the government of Iraq saying,
right,
and we want you out.
And all along, Bush has been saying, we'll stand down when they stand up. Obviously, they are standing up and saying, we don't need you here anymore.
Yeah, right. Well, exactly. You know, they're saying that we're supporting them, and I think that in the Republican debate the other last week, you know, one of them said we should put it to a vote, and if they vote us to leave, then
right,
we should
Thompson,
leave. Well, hello, it just happened, and nobody's reporting it.
Yeah. Hey, Cindy, did you want to react to that?
Well, I actually just saw it myself. I just heard about it for the first time when I was checking my email. It was one of the news items on Yahoo News, and I think that's our clear signal to get out. You know.
Yeah.
I just had a man yell at me this morning. I was on another radio show, and he called in, and he said, you know, it's a sovereign country. When they want us to leave, we'll leave. Well, they want us to leave, so we should leave.
Yeah. Well, it's been in the poll. Obviously, whenever they poll, the Iraqi citizens overwhelmingly want us out of there. But it's always been the contention of our government that you know, we're there to help prop up their government. And if their government doesn't want us there, end of story as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Let's bring the troops home.
Yeah. I'm all for it. Hey, Claudia, thanks so much for your call today.
Okay.
Good talking to you. Cindy, thank you so much for being with us. Safe travels to D.C. I hope you get thousands upon thousands of people showing up for the march on Monday. And you decided to do it on a Monday this time around. Typically, you're saying a weekend sort of makes it too easy on them, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. We have to be there when people are in town and when it's going to inconvenience people to make an impact, I believe.
Yeah, great idea. Thank you so much for everything you
do. Thank you. It was great talking to you.
Good talking to you again, Cindy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be right back, folks, with more of your phone calls. I got a segment coming up before my next guest, so I'll try and squeeze in as many calls as I can. I'll be right back.
Upset with the setup, get up, make a change. Upset with the setup, get up and make a change. Upset with the setup, get up and make a change. Upset, fed up, change it.
Hey, we're back. It's the Molloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. That was a little ditty by the Ice Makers of the Revolution. Radical band from back there in Indiana, where I used to live. Let's go to the phones. Frank in Charlotte, North Carolina. Frank, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Okay, you know how people have been talking about impeaching Bush? I think that we need to forget about it, trying to impeach him. And people start trying to bring him up on charges. I know we won't be able to do it while he's the president, but when he gets out of office, him and Dick Cheney, because what they were talking about, those aluminum tubes, the wall thickness of them was 3 millimeters thick, and they needed to be 1 millimeter thick, and they knew that. So it was impossible to the ones that they were saying that for the centrifuge, it was impossible to make those tubes into that 1 millimeter tube, because if you would try to machine a tube down that long, it would collapse.
And there's plenty of evidence out there now from former members of the intelligence community, CIA people, who can corroborate that they did know they were lying when they talked about the yellow cake, when they talked about the aluminum tubes, when they talked about the connections with Al-Qaeda and Saddam.
And people, to me, need to start talking more about that and forget about him trying to impeach him. Let him know that he's going to go to prison in some time in his life.
Well, I think he's planning to move to Paraguay, from what I understand. He had his daughter down there buying up a big hunk of land, and he'll have his private security force around him. He's going to be tough to get to.
Well, it doesn't really matter. We got the forces.
Yep, that's true.
Hope that we could start talking about doing something like that. And,
Yeah, there's also the Hague. There's the War Crimes Tribunal at the Hague. I think this should be an internet. It's going to be hard for an American president to actively go after a predecessor and have him jailed. It's going to have to happen on a national stage, I think, personally.
Okay. But the thing about it is that we're going to be having elections, and people, they want our vote.
Yep.
We tell them that, you know what, this person needs to go to prison.
Yep.
There's a lot of people dying, and there's a lot of people being crippled.
Excellent point. Yep.
Somebody needs to pay for that, and I know two people that need to pay for it.
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go to Joe in Miami. Joe, you're on the air.
Jeff, how you doing, man?
Good. How you doing today?
Now, I've come to the realization it's all a numbers game. So what I've been doing is I've been calling the Republican senators vulnerable this year, 20 of them.
Right.
I remind them that we're six open seats. Or six seats up last time, they lost five.
Right.
And like I said, the Gang of 11 showed up today at the White House. I don't know if you heard about this. 11 Republican congressmen?
No, I didn't hear about that.
They showed up about 2:30 in the afternoon, told Bush he has no credibility anymore with the American people.
Wow.
It's starting out, man. See, what you got to start doing is calling the Republicans and tell them, hey, listen, you guys could be leaving. You're out of there. Rent the Hertz trucks early all together and get a cheap rate on it because you're finished. And I mean, people got to start pounding these people that nobody out here supports Bush, and you guys are going down with them.
Right. Excellent point. Yeah, 20 of them are up for re-election in
L.A. Right. Like I said, you got to keep reminding them that you're out here, you're seething, you're mad, and you might as well start packing now because it's all over.
Wow. I love that idea that we got to start getting after.
Right.
I think it's just, I also love the idea that the 11 congressmen went to, very reminiscent of when Goldwater and Arizona's Congressman John Rhodes.
Scott went to Goldwater.
Yeah, went to Nixon. And,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I said when they realize they're vulnerable, because like I said, they can't be back in Bush.
Right.
He's going to take them down. They got to realize their whole chance of doing anything or staying in office is getting away from Bush.
Right. Yeah.
Take care, Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. And as they were very fond of reminding us for the first 6 years of the Bush administration, elections have consequences. Yes, I love that phrase. Elections have consequences. Hey, VoteVets.org has a brand new campaign out there. I'm going to play you one of them real quick. This is the one featuring retired General Army General John Batista.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
The ad ends with the printed phrase, "Protect our troops, not George Bush." A whole series of them, retired generals reacting to the president, being used by VoteVets.org and various political campaigns directed at senators all around the country. Hey, be right back. We'll be talking with Michael Ottoman. American torture will be the topic. And, of course, your phone calls. Stick around, folks. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. Joined by a very special guest by telephone. Michael Ottoman is a freelance journalist and documentary filmmaker. Put out a book called American Torture, From the Cold War to Abu Ghraib and Beyond. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I think most Americans were shocked when they saw those pictures from Abu Ghraib and to hear the pronouncements from Alberto Gonzalez. The Geneva Conventions were quaint, and to find out, even though they were denying it, that Americans were actually torturing people around the planet. But according to your book, this isn't quite as new as some of us would believe.
That's exactly right. I mean, I was shocked, as you were, when those images first flashed across our computer screens and TV screens in what was then April 2004. I was actually in Sydney at the time, getting my master's in peace and conflict studies. And I kind of turned that shock into, directed into my research that I was doing at the university. And what I quickly found was, as shocking as these things were that were going on in Abu Ghraib, this is not an isolated incident. Similar behavior has occurred in, say, Vietnam. Our allies in Latin America has been taught to use a lot of these same psychological torture techniques. And there are CIA manuals dating back from the 60s and even up through the 80s that outline a lot of the same methods. So once I started discovering these things, I realized there's a much bigger story there.
Right. Yeah, actually, you actually managed to get a hold of one of those manuals from the 80s. I saw that you have it published in your book. Was that a Freedom of Information deal, or how'd you get a hold of that document?
I mean, to be honest, the bulk of the information I have in my book comes from the U.S. government itself. And so in this case, I've included a portion of a 1983 CIA interrogation training manual, which was written for CIA trainers that were sent down to Latin America to help these armies with intelligence work, this particular manual, as long as another famous manual that was written in 1963, they were actually declassified a few years ago in 1997 through a Freedom of Information Act request by the Baltimore Sun newspaper that was looking into Latin American human rights abuse at the time. So those were actually already out there, and I found them at the National Security Archives website.
Wow, amazing. Now, you mentioned in the book that since 9/11 in 2001, there have been more than 800 allegations of abuse at the hands of American captors, I guess. Your book starts, it's called In Their Own Words, and starts with talking about two specific incidents, Mamdo Habib and David Hicks, both Australians.
That's right. I mean, I've been spending, well, it's nearly the past 4 years out in Sydney. And while these names maybe aren't too familiar to us here in Australia, they sure are. These are two Australians that have been held. Well, one of them is back now in Australia, Mamdo Habib. David Hicks is still in Guantanamo, although he's being transferred back to Australia supposedly fairly soon. These two people have become major source of news, you know, front page editorials nonstop, especially in the past few years. And I talk about the case of Mamdo Habib. Should I go into that?
Yes,
now?
Please do. Yeah, please. Yeah, specifically.
Yeah, well, Mamdo Habib, like I said, he's an Australian citizen, but he was born in Egypt. And essentially what happened was he was arrested in Pakistan soon after the events of 9/11, and he was turned over by Pakistani police directly over to the Americans and to the CIA. And Mamdo Habib, he's an Australian citizen. He hasn't lived in Egypt for decades, but the CIA transferred him, or rendered him, as they call it, to Egypt, where he suffered extreme torture, and not the psychological techniques that we see in, say, the Abu Ghraib pictures, but real medieval type of stuff. After 6 months of torture in Egypt, he admitted to a long list of crimes, training Hezbollah and transporting chemical weapons, and all these things. And after he admitted to these multiple charges, he was transferred back into the American hands and was sent to Guantanamo, where these specific things they admitted to in Egypt under torture ended up on his rap sheet at Guantanamo. As it turns out, in early 2005, Dana Priest of the Washington Post found out about him and his treatment and wrote a front-page story in the Washington Post. And a few days later, he was released back to Australia without charge, quite mysteriously. So that's the case of Mamdo Habib. And as for Hicks, like I said, he's currently in Guantanamo. Like Mamdo, he's an Australian citizen. He was actually picked up fighting. Well, he wasn't necessarily fighting. He was fleeing Afghanistan, but he was with other Taliban soldiers. And very much like our John Walker Lynn, this American Taliban. He's what you could call an Australian Taliban. He was actually with Taliban fighters. He never fired a shot or never killed anyone, but he was with them. And like Mamdo Habib, well, he wasn't sent to Egypt. David Hicks was sent straight to Guantanamo, one of the first shipments of prisoners to the prison in early 2002. And he's been there, over 5 years. And it was only recently that he was actually charged with anything. This was only about a month ago, and he pled guilty to material support of terrorism and was given a 9-month sentence. This is after serving 5 years already.
Right.
And so together, these two, especially the case of David Hicks, has become a real political issue in Australia, with the opposition party in Australia, you know, basically blaming the Prime Minister, John Howard, for turning his back on the rights of an Australian citizen because...
To appease the Bush administration, basically.
Yeah. Exactly. The Australia and America are actually very close. I'd argue the relationship between Australia and the U.S. are even closer than with the U.K. It's an incredibly close political relationship, and his opponents use this example of David Hicks as a prime example of this.
Wow. Unbelievable. I'd like to talk maybe... it's interesting. Now, your book details a fairly long history of American using these sort of psychological torture practices. Why do you think it suddenly has gone, why has it suddenly gone public? Why did they start admitting it? Why did they start trying to change? If they'd been doing it all along, why was there a need to change the laws in this country to allow them to torture publicly?
Right. Well, as you said, these types of things, they have been going on, at least, you know, I pick up in my book, since the early Cold War period.
Mm-hmm.
This is a time where it's quite irrational when you think about it now, but people in the military and the CIA, they grew convinced that the Soviets and the maybe communist China had figured out ways of breaking people down and twisting mm-hmm. their mind and making them confess to things, which maybe they didn't do. So, you know, you could look at the Soviet show trials of the 1930s and 40s, and actually during the Korean War, a lot of downed U.S. pilots admitted to imagined crimes in North Korea after they were shot down. Mm-hmm. They'd go on the air and admit to things. So this created a certain fear among intelligence agencies, and this is when they began to study and fully adopt a lot of these techniques. So these were going on behind closed doors, you know, mainly. It was only after 9/11 that you have people actually legalizing them, I mean, in a very strong sense, mm-hmm. and issuing memos that authorize these techniques.
Right. Right.
You know, under the guise that we need to extract this information, and torture is not only to be used but to be fully legalized.
Yeah, I guess if they were already doing it, that's the part I just don't understand. Is it just were they just trying to, you know, scare the enemy? what's the point of going public with something that they've been doing in secret? You know what I mean?
Well,
is it just part of the intimidation?
That's a great question that reaches maybe into the deeper aspects of torture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a means of interrogation, it's actually the worst way to go about it, because
right.
under torture, someone's going to admit to everything and anything under the sun,
right.
and make stuff up. And what's worse, they say exactly what they think the interrogator wants to hear.
Right.
So you end up getting a lot of garbage that's not even true. I think after 9/11, you know, there is a real kind of drive to, you know, what's called take the gloves off. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you have Dick Cheney going on the radio, going on Meet the Press, rather, and saying, you know, we need to take this to the dark side. We're going
right.
to use methods that, you know, we can't even speak about. You have Bush being quoted, you know, I don't care what the international lawyers say. We're going to really just go after these guys. And so this is the directives coming down from the top, you know, and this rhetoric trickled down, and it trickled mm-hmm. down all the way to the soldiers in Abu Ghraib.
Wow.
This get tough mentality, where the rules suddenly, even the rules that we thought applied now don't even apply.
Hey, Michael, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to just talk a little bit about actually something you touched on in that last piece about the effectiveness of torture and what do you really get out of it.
Right.
So we'll be right back with more with Michael Ottoman. The book is called American Torture, From the Cold War to Abu Ghraib and Beyond. It's the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio Network. We'll be right back. We're talking with Michael Ottoman, an award-winning journalist and documentary filmmaker. He's recently written a book called American Torture, From the Cold War to Abu Ghraib and Beyond. Welcome back, Michael.
Hi. Good to be back.
Want to talk to you. Now, we heard reports of part of the justification for us invading Iraq and occupying that country actually came from some CIA, quote-unquote, assets, one of which called Curveball, and there are others out there, who we actually found out later, they actually were tortured. Some of the information we got for the case for war came out of torturing people.
Yeah.
And I just want to talk to you about, in your research and your studying this, what have you learned about the effectiveness of torture to actually get real information?
Well, well. I mean, as you kind of alluded to, it's completely counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
There's one particular guy who the CIA captured early on in the war on terror. His name is Sheikh Al-Libi. He was in charge of running some training camps in Afghanistan. He was definitely affiliated with Al-Qaeda, there's no doubt about it. And essentially what happened was, well, first he was interrogated by the FBI. And I should point out, the FBI, historically and still today, doesn't use these types of interrogation techniques. They use nonviolent, what's called rapport-building techniques, where you build trust between you and the detainee.
Good cop, bad cop.
Good cop, bad cop. You give incentives. You promise better treatment, or maybe you promise their son or daughter could, you know, go to a better school, whatever it is. But they're nonviolent incentives that have actually been proven to work, not only with criminal cases, but with terrorism cases, like the embassy bombings in 98, the first World Trade Center attack. So anyway, the FBI started using these methods of interrogation, and the CIA agents present grew restless.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to get tough, and essentially they appealed directly to George Tenet. Tenet appealed to the president requested that this prisoner be handed over to the CIA, and that's exactly what happened. He was given over to the CIA, and first he was sent, like Mamdouh Habib, he was sent over to Egypt for extreme torture, and then he was given back to the CIA, and under what Bush has called these enhanced interrogation techniques with the CIA, which include waterboarding, where you basically lay a person on their back and fill their mouth with water, convincing them they're drowning,
right,
forcing him to stand for up to 40 hours at a time, giving him hypothermia, and then raising the temperature back up. Under these CIA-enhanced methods, I argue torture, he admitted to things. And what he admitted was that Saddam Hussein trained al-Qaeda in poisons and gases. There was a close collaboration between Saddam and al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda would visit Baghdad and receive special training. And these things that were said under torture actually started appearing in President Bush's speeches. They actually popped up in Colin Powell's speech to the UN, justifying a case for war.
Mm-hmm.
After Al-Libi admitted to these things, the torture ceased. His information was used by the administration, but he soon retracted it all. And as we've seen, it was all just a pack of lies just made up to please his interrogators,
right,
and to stop the sensation of pain that was being inflicted upon him. So it's a pretty explicit example of just how far bad intel could go and how it could be twisted and used by powers that be, say. It doesn't get accurate information, and whereas these FBI rapport building techniques do.
Right. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of people have studied this. People in our intelligence community know that they get bad information from torture. Mm-hmm. They have to know it puts our soldiers at risk. So why are they doing it? Is this about a power play? Is this about intimidation? Is it just about putting on a show that they're willing to get tough, both to the enemies out there and to the American people? Or, I mean, why are we doing it?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely part of it. I mean, like I said, when Cheney said we have to go to the dark side, he was sending that message. And torture sends this message as well, where we are willing to fight dirty.
Right.
The costs completely outweigh any benefits,
right,
if any.
Right.
The costs have been tremendous in the war on terror. The fact that we've been using these techniques, like to pull out one example, say in Iraq, a few weeks before the Abu Ghraib pictures came out, there was a coalition poll taken, and about 60% of Iraqis actually supported the occupation.
Until they found out about the torture. Hey,
yeah,
Michael, I'm really sorry. I got to cut you off. I just cut the music, and I got to go.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Again, American Torture is the book. Michael Otterman, AmericanTorture.com is the website.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show here on the Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. We're streaming at novamradio.com. My name's Jeff Farrier, sitting in for Mike Malloy all this week. Special thanks to Michael Otterman for stopping by, talking about his book, American Torture, and also for Cindy Sheehan. Details about her march. I got a link over to her website posted over on my website, jefffarias.com. If you want to send me an email over the course of the program, that's jeff@jefffarias.com. But we're caller-driven from here on out, folks. For the next half an hour, I'll be taking your phone calls, whatever's on your mind, any topics on the table. I got a few audio bites to share, a few stories to talk about, but willing to forego that to see what you think, you're thinking. First up is Kirk in Worcester, Mass. Kirk, welcome.
Yes, hi, Jeff. I was just saying that, back to your topic about Cindy Sheehan. She was wondering why some things are going so slowly in Congress with the Senate. Why we're getting non-binding bills? We really don't have. And we need to put extra pressure on the Senate. We really don't have a majority in the Senate. With Johnson recovering from brain trauma, I don't even know if I believe that. And Lieberman occasionally voting with the Republicans, sometimes Nelson in Nebraska, sometimes voting with Republicans. And, we're going to have to really pressure the Senate even harder than maybe in the House.
But between our 50 or so real Democrats and the 20 Republicans who are seeking election in a year and a half, I think that should be a pretty good block to get these kind of things done. You know what I mean? They're just... I understand that obviously the number's against us, and I've actually used that argument in their defense as well. But, you know, at some point, they just got to stop letting Bush define the argument.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We had this huge election in November that the people overwhelmingly said, not just by how they voted, but in all the exit polls, that they wanted this Iraq war to end. And the president instead creates a surge and moves the goalposts, basically, and this whole discussion changed. And that's what
of course he's not going to listen to the American people. He just wants the oil profits.
Right. Yeah. They want the oil. They want the contractors to stay in business. You know, Cheney was one of the original architects of shrinking the military when he was in Congress. He was one of the main people trying to get them to drop certain systems, all the while investing in putting his fingers in the private contractor business. Knowing that the less prepared our military was, the more money would flow into his pockets once he ever got in a position to start some trouble around the world.
All right. Well, thanks for letting me speak, all right?
Thanks, Kirk. All right. Say hello to the folks back there in Worcester, Mass. My favorite places. Let's go to, who's up? Bob in New Orleans. Bob, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jeff. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing tonight?
Okay, listen, first of all, I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
The thing I want to point out, though, Jeff, is that I'm agreeing with you earlier, caller. We don't have the votes in the Democratic Congress, okay? It's about one vote in the Senate, and there's not near enough in the House to whatever the House does, the Senate's going to probably vote down anyway, okay? But the thing is that I think if the Democrats do sign off any type of funding bill, they're going to do so because next year they don't want to go to their constituents and have 30-second sound bites from Republicans, and they will do this. The Democrats do not fund the troops, and they're not going to, you know, it all started with Lee Atwater and then Karl Rove. Democrats do not have any answer for these men, okay? And the Republicans won in 2004 on 8 words. Do you know what 8 words are?
What's that?
War in Iraq, cut taxes, no gay marriage.
Right, yeah.
And they're going to win on that probably in 2008.
I don't know. You know, I think a lot of the I'm not sure if that funding the I think the Democrats overreact to that link. Obviously, it hurt him in 02. It hurt him to some degree in 04. But I think the American people have caught on to this by now. I think most last poll I saw, 70% of Americans or 69% of Americans want this thing ended. And just throwing more money at it isn't necessarily winning any voters over to the Republican side. I think they'd rather see us stop paying. And this whole notion, and I sound like a broken record on this, but this whole notion of Bush asking for money, gets the money with some conditions, and then says, no, why are the Democrats trying to appease them? Just sit back and say, fine. If somebody wants money from me, they got to come to me and ask for it.
But, Jeff, I'd like to say this. There's hardly any pressure on Bush to end this war the way it was under Richard Nixon for Vietnam.
Right.
In 68 and the 70s, you had millions. You got a few people calling you on a radio station.
Yeah,
you got
true.
A few newspapers, The Nation and maybe New York Times.
Yep.
That's against the wall, but... You see, I was part of that generation. I had friends of mine went up to Chicago in 1968, got their heads bashed in. I wonder how many people that listen to the show would risk getting their heads bashed in to for their cause, and maybe 1%. But back then, they did it by the thousands.
Well, and they also did. I mean, it was a youth movement, and it was people who were facing the draft or had friends facing a draft. And again, I'm not advocating for the draft, but that's a big difference in that climate. The Republicans have been very clever. A caller earlier alluded to this. They've been very clever in minimalizing the effect of this war on most Americans. They hide the coffins from us. They the very few people are actually asked to sacrifice. Very few people even know somebody who has served or serving in Iraq.
For sure, absolutely. So, but there's hardly any pressure on Bush other than a few articles.
Right.
But Richard Nixon was under tremendous pressure under Vietnam.
And also pressure from his own party, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the parameters have changed under Bush than what Richard Nixon had.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think that the only way you're going to really change the parameters of this war is like what Cindy Sheehan's doing, but you're going to have to take it to the streets. You're going to have to take it to the streets many times.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of young people, middle-aged people, who's going to have to get their skulls cracked wide open to change the course of events. Otherwise, we can just sit on our can and cry in our beer and say, gee, I wish the war in Iraq ended.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen that way. If they don't do what they did in the 60s and the 70s, nothing's going to change.
I think you make a great point. People got to wake up to it.
There's no outrage.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear all this whining on the phone about Bush and about, I wonder how many people called in must have voted for the guy. You see, I'm a yellow dog Democrat. I'm never voted Republican.
Right, right.
I voted for John F. Kennedy straight on through, okay? And as a young man, I've always voted for my party because I always thought they were on the right side of history.
Right.
And, I hear these people call in and they're crying, but I don't see them taken to the streets.
People here in Phoenix take to the streets. A lot of the people who call into this show are people who I recognize from out at the marches. People who go out and stand in front of John McCain's office every week with signs calling attention to his support of the war and his support of torture. So there are people getting active. There just aren't enough of us yet.
But you got to have millions.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know how many Cindy Sheehan's going to have, but I hope the lady has all the luck in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think she's going to have millions.
Yep.
And what's going to happen? She's going to get arrested and thrown in jail.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah. These people got to wake up and realize. And I don't know the average age of the people calling into your show. I'm in my 60s, but I know what the generation in the 60s and 70s did. And they carried banners. They went to Washington. They did a lot of things, and eventually they changed the course of the war.
Right.
But this is not going to end. This is not going to end this year. It's not going to end next year until people take it to the streets. And I don't know. The Republicans have so much money in back of them with the corporations and Saudi money, and they got all the rich and the powerful behind them. The Democrats generally rely on low donors, and I don't know what we have. I don't like our leading candidates. They're okay. They're good people. They're intelligent people. But I don't know if we have the right people to win. I'm looking at Hillary. I got so many of my friends that are Democrats, but they're not going to vote for her.
Right.
The thing on Obama is the school's out on him.
Mm-hmm.
They like Edwards, but he's pulling in 14%. So I don't know. Where do we go? John Kerry was a terrible candidate. Who ran a terrible campaign. I didn't think he was ever going to win.
Yeah, but the press said he was electable. Remember that?
The mainstream media decided he was electable.
Yeah.
His mistake was he did not answer the Swiss Bowl campaign.
Right.
He didn't answer that.
He let it go for six
months.
And
the thing is, people say, well, if he can't take care of himself, how is he going to take care of us?
Right, right. He also closed his campaign with $25 million in the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Are we in 2008? The Republicans are sneaking in the back door in spite of all this bad stuff in the economy with home sales down, unemployment, outsourcing, the war in Iraq. And mark my words, the Republicans will probably win in 2008 because somewhere there's a Karl Rove in the background or another Lee Atwater. And ask Joe Biden because he says we have no answer to Karl Rove.
Right.
We have none.
Yep.
So I don't know, Jeff, what the answer is. It's,
Until
the Democrats develop some balls and the constituents out there get serious about taking it to the streets, we're just whistling in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my feeling.
Appreciate your call, Bob.
Thanks
a lot, buddy. Thanks. We're going to take a break. We'll get back more phone calls. The phone number here, 1-800-989-1480 is the toll-free. Got a couple lines open. Give us a call. Weigh in. What's on your mind tonight? Back to the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. I saw this over at Fire Dog Lake. I just throw this out there real quick and we'll get right back on the phones. Earlier today, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has considered the nomination for a new head of the State Department's Office of the Coordinator for Counterterrorism. So this is the office that's responsible for counterterrorism cooperation with foreign governments and participates in the development, coordination, and implementation of American counterterrorism policy. The nominee's name is Del Daley, currently the director of the Center for Special Operations, the command responsible for global operations and actionable intelligence related to high-value targets. Lieutenant General Daley is also the man in charge of special ops for the war in Afghanistan. So essentially, this guy has been running the administration's black ops, overseeing, apparently, you heard our last guest, Michael Ottoman, a lot of the torture going on around the world. And so now this guy, in charge of the renditions program, is now in line to take over the State Department of overseeing improving our counterterrorism efforts. More torture on the horizon, apparently. Jeff in Hollywood, Florida, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing today?
Good, good. You were talking earlier about why they brought it all out into the light.
Mm-hmm.
After that last caller, I'm going to give you a little comic relief. But I can see Alberto tap dancing a memo under a light. But basically, it's to add to the psychological gumbo of this. It's definitely to scare the American people.
Right.
Because the in tandem with the Padilla case and,
mm-hmm.
of course, the exploding watermelons in Miami, and the what's going on with this nonsense, the pizza delivery guys coming in and getting ready to take over our military.
Right, base. Yeah, videotaping
absurd.
Their secret plan. Right, right.
Absurd. And plus they goat these guys on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all part of this overload of information to keep us, look at it like a Tootsie Roll. That keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Hmm.
And you can't get back to the center.
Right.
That's how they're working you.
So it's about the fear. They want this out there because want to keep Americans in line by thinking, you know what, there's no more habeas corpus, Military Commissions Act, and you could be next. So shut up.
You better hope they don't plan on implementing it.
Right.
And you
right.
better plan. Don't worry about impeachment. You better hope this, excuse me, I almost said it, leaves off. So that should be your your main concern.
Right.
I would start saying, I would start encouraging him, hey, it's time to go, and you see, you're leaving soon. So
mm-hmm.
That would be my main concern, because the way things look, it don't look good.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that.
Take it easy, guys.
You too, buddy. Bye. Let's go to Ron in Davis, California. Ron, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff, man. It's good listening to you. I've never heard you before because we just don't catch you out here in Davis, California.
Right. Yeah, I'm just on in Phoenix and over the web right now here in California.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, one of the things, there's so many things to talk about. I was in Southeast Asia 62 through 64 in the Peace Corps, so I saw the whole thing coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a madman sort of researcher, quasi-academic with just about everything. And one doesn't know really where to start when you get like a sort of obsessive like me with all the crap. But we can't forget Iran, and that sort of slipped out of our vision right now for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Nimitz is cruising in there, theoretically, to relieve the Eisenhower. And if the Eisenhower stays, then what? And we could easily provoke, you know, some secret whatever could provoke a so-called
right.
incident. And then we'd all just be, you know.
Right.
We just descend into hell.
We had Scott Ritter in town a couple of weeks ago, and kind of what he laid out is that they had till about mid-June. To do something to strike Iran if they were really serious about it, just because of the way the deployment is set up and arranged. So if they don't do something by then, they're going to have to pull those ships out there, redeploy, and think about something further down the road. So
now is
the time to be really watchful.
There's a cat I like too, because I'm only going to be able to talk to you for a couple of days here. There's a guy I really like to hip you to. I could probably hook you up with him somehow on your show, and he could talk to you, because I don't have a computer. His name is Dave Dionisi. He's the author of American Hiroshima. And the reason I mention him is he was he's only in his 40s, and he spent 8 years in military intelligence. For example, he was in Central America when George H. Bush blasted Panama into hell for 3 days and left. And he couldn't understand why everybody in the Army, including him, had to switch over to desert camo. Right, this was like 1990.
Right.
And, he's like a walking textbook, and he happens to be a friend of mine.
Can you spell his last name for me?
It's, D-I-O-N-I-S-I.
Okay, good guess. Okay,
Dionisi. Cool. First name, Dave.
I'll look him up.
Yeah, he's, I could probably call him and have him give you a call, or maybe he could email you or something, or you could email him. He's on www.teachpeace.com.
Oh, okay.
He's like a walking textbook.
Great.
Yeah, he's one of the heaviest people out there, I would say, in terms of black ops. Now, he knows the names of all the black ops and stuff. I mean, he's really mellow, but he's heavy duty.
I'll have to check them out.
Yeah, check them out.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate you calling.
Okay, carry on, man.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
For those of you who don't know, I usually do the 3 hours here on Nova M right before the Molloy Show, from 3 to 6 West Coast, 6 to 9 on the East Coast, streaming at Nova M Radio, hopefully coming to a radio station on the ground somewhere near you sometime soon. But you can find me on the web almost all the time. Let's go to a break right now. When we get back, lots more of your phone calls. I got one phone line open if you want to sneak in at 1-800-989-1480. It's the Mike Molloy Show. I'll be right back. we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in for Mike. I want to play this clip. I just pulled this from over at John Amato's website, crooksandliars.com. You're going to hear Keith Olbermann, Brian Williams, and Tim Russert. Here you go.
We have breaking news about an extraordinary meeting at the White House. Not necessarily Hugh Scott and Barry Goldwater taking their tough love to the Richard Nixon White House, but the possible watershed moment so many have awaited. 11 congressional Republicans telling this president in almost unprecedented frankness that the people they represent are prepared for defeat in Iraq and that he has no credibility left about the war. Our Washington Bureau Chief Tim Russert sharing the exclusive details with Brian Williams on Nightly News.
At 2:30 in the afternoon, in the private quarters of the White House, the Solarium Room, 11 Republican congressmen had a private meeting with the President, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the Chief Political Advisor Karl Rove, and the White House Press Secretary Tony Snow, and others. This delegation was headed by Mark Kirk of Illinois and Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania. It was, in the words of one of the participants, the most unvarnished conversation they've ever had with the president. Another member said he has met with three presidents and never been so candid. They told the president, in one said, quote, "My district is prepared for defeat. We need candor. We need honesty, Mr. President." The president responded, "I don't want to pass this off to another president. I don't want to pass this off particularly to a Democratic president," underscoring he understood how serious the situation was. Brian, the Republican congressman then went on to say, "The word about the war and its progress cannot come from the White House or even you, Mr. President. There's no longer any credibility. It has to come from General Petraeus." The meeting lasted an hour and 15 minutes and was, in the words of one, remarkable for the bluntness and no holds barred honesty in the message delivered by all these Republican congressmen.
And Tim, in the seconds remaining, how did the president react, and how then did this affect the instructions for Vice President Cheney heading off to Iraq?
One congressman said, "How can our daughters and sons spill their blood while the Iraqi parliament goes on vacation?" The president responded, "The vice president is over there to tell them, do not go on vacation."
Again, thanks to crooksandliars.com, John Amato, for getting that posted so quickly. My reaction to that is, it's about damn time. Now, finally, the president knows what 75% of Americans understand. He has no credibility. The White House has no credibility. Dick Cheney has no credibility on the war in Iraq. This is that sort of, Olbermann kind of qualified it, saying this isn't necessarily the Barry Goldwater, John Rhodes moment where they went up to the White House and told Nixon to resign, but it's pretty close. Let's go to Tom in Phoenix. You're up next. Tom, welcome.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking my phone call. To kind of to reiterate what you were just saying there, I am a Republican, and I was watching the debates the other night, and I loved what Ron Paul had to say. He was the only Republican out there that said, get the heck out of Iran, for all the same reasons, 70%. First of all, the war was never declared a war, so it's
right.
A little bit unconstitutional, and he is a constitutionalist. But I think I did get a chance to watch most of the Democratic debate also, and I just think Ron Paul is the best candidate out there to date. I don't know how you feel.
Well, it's hard to learn anything in the debates. They're not even debates, really. They're speed dates, with a moderator. They each get 60 seconds to read some rehearsed piece. It almost seemed like both debates, it didn't matter what the question was. They were going to say whatever they wanted to say. I respect the libertarian point of view. I like Ron Paul. I like Richardson. I like Edwards on the other side. It's going to be interesting to see how the whole thing plays out. And of course I love Kucinich, but, I'm not sure if there's enough people who are going to get behind him. His numbers are kind of slow right now.
You know what's really crazy, Jeff, is that Ron Paul, before the debates, only had like 9% of the vote. Mm-hmm. After the debates, on all the polls except for Matt Drudge's, he was the leading candidate.
Wow.
He was creaming everybody except for Matt Drudge. He came in third, but just a hair behind Giuliani.
Right.
But you won't hear the media talk about it.
Yeah, it's odd.
Censored.
Yeah, it really is odd who and what they're talking about. I mean, if you look at the Democrats, it's pretty much only Hillary and Obama and the occasional Edwards mention. You never hear from any of the other candidates out there. And on the Republican side, it's all Giuliani and McCain. Yeah.
Gravel, is that how you pronounce his name?
Who?
Gravel.
Gravel, I believe, yeah.
He was excellent.
Yep.
I loved what he had to say, but you know what? They made him...
They made a caricature of him, yeah.
You know, it's like when I talk to some of the conservatives, even though I am a Republican, I don't know what I am anymore, but when I call some of the Republicans, you know, the conservative stations, and I talk to them about the things I think about, they'll play the cuckoo clock in the background on talking.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they're doing to all the lower tier candidates. It's really a shame.
Yeah, it really is. The press believes it has the power to anoint who the candidates are. We saw that with John Kerry. Suddenly John Kerry was the only one who was electable and could beat George Bush. I was just stunned at that time. Hey, Tom, thanks for your call, buddy.
Okay.
Good luck with Ron Paul. Jesse in San Diego, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Good.
Problem I see is why does it take 11 Republicans to do something that the 200 and some Democrats can't do?
Well, because he won't listen to the Democrats.
Yeah.
It's got to come from his own party. That's the only people they're afraid of, is people within their own. If their own party turns against them, they can hold off the Democrats because he can veto it. And it doesn't matter what the Democrats say, he can veto it. When the Republicans turn, then he's not veto-proof anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, I could imagine what Karl Rove was saying in that meeting. Mm. He didn't hire me for credibility.
Right, yeah. I doubt he said anything, but we'll see.
Basically, all I want to get at, there's only two Democrats, you know, out there, and that's Gravel and Kucinich. The rest are using the war as a political strategy to try to position themselves for the election. That's what the Republicans are doing.
I find it disheartening when I hear the strategists on the Democratic side talking about, you know, the right timing of it and letting, if we let this thing drag out to election time, it can hurt them more. And that kind of bothers me because every day we wait, as I said when I spoke to Cindy earlier, you know, another mother buries a child. So,
well, as long as they use it as a strategy,
right? Yeah,
they're bringing legitimacy to the war, and it's a totally illegitimate war.
Yep.
All right, man.
I agree with you, buddy. Thanks for your call tonight. Let's see. I'm going to go to up next, Mike in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mike, welcome.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I've enjoyed listening to you this week.
Thank you.
And, you know, something I just don't get people. And what I mean by that is that look at what's happened to our country.
Mm-hmm.
If you sit back and look at it, even though that you're being told that, you know, the economy's good, you know, the stock market is doing great, but if you sit back and you really look at everything, everything's gone up.
Right.
You know, if you look at precious metals, everything's gone up. So you don't have to, you know, there's got to be a lot of people who just don't pay attention in this country, because if you look, you can see what the truth is. You don't have to be told what the truth is. You can see it.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand America, because this is not the America that I was born in and I grew up in. This is some foreign country that's foreign-owned. And my problem is that I don't even understand Republicans or conservatism, because I've never seen it. I never saw it with Ronald Reagan running up a $3 trillion debt.
Yep, and a lot of people don't talk about this, but we went from the world's largest creditor to the world's largest debtor in 8 years under Reagan.
Yeah, we're number six now.
Yep.
You know, we're 36 somewhere in that range in health care. We've just gone down. Now, these are all due to so-called conservative policies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Iraq was a gamble on a conservative, the conservative ideology.
Right.
They played this gamble. They rewrote their constitution.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in all the corporations. And they got 60% unemployment. So what I want to say to everybody, even Republicans, I don't have anything against Republicans. The only thing I don't understand is why you can't see what I see, is that it doesn't work.
Right.
And if we don't come together as people, you're not going to have to worry about Democrats, and you're not going to have to worry about Republicans, because we're not going to have a country. This country will go bankrupt if all these other countries go to the euro.
Right.
You'll see hyperinflation, you know, a loaf of bread costing $10 for a loaf of bread.
because we're practically broke.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, I hear you. I got to go to a break. I can tell by the music. Thanks for listening, and thanks for giving us a call tonight. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, makes a lot of good points. Got to get out there and fight it, folks. Be right back.
Give up my whole day's wages to get this hole in the wall. I call a holster that is empty, just a gun to the head. I am a holy roller, I'm playing Russian roulette. I've been told gambling's a sin. I'm gonna place my bet.
Falling sad, drinking an old cafe. Never slept with a dream before you had to go away. There's a bell in the tower, Uncle Ray bought around. Don't worry about the army in the cold, cold ground. Cold, cold ground. Cold, cold ground. Cold, cold ground.
Cold, hey, we're back. Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. I want to direct you over to my website, jefffarias.com. A couple things. Somebody sent me a link yesterday. The ACLU is trying to organize a movement to people to sign on to restore the writ of habeas corpus, the grand writ, the basis, the very first human right guaranteed in our modern judicial system. And there's a link down there. It's about the third entry down. Check it out. Link over. Sign the ACLU's petition to bring back habeas corpus. Also have some links to Cindy Sheehan's March on Monday and Michael Otterman's book on torture. And a letter I got from a listener, and I'm not going to read the letter, but I'll read you the first two sentences of the letter, and I prefer you go over there and read it yourself and react to it, okay? Came an email from a listener, said, "My grandson Jacob lost his battle and passed away last Friday night. He was born with spina bifida and Arnold Chiari malformation. We just couldn't conduct enough core washes to sell enough donuts to raise the $200,000 for him to receive more surgery. He was on Medicaid. So many doctors just turned us away, and private insurance would not cover him. All of this in the wealthiest pro-life country, in which spends $10 billion per month murdering innocent human beings in Iraq. All this in a country where the president vetoes funds for stem cell research. Thanks for all the love and support. We now have to raise $850 for them to dig his grave and another $1,700 deposit for the funeral home. This will still leave a huge balance just to lay him to rest, and this is due to the fact that he was uninsurable by our wonderful insurance companies. Anyone who wishes to contribute can donate to the same page. Any donations would be appreciated. And there's a link to Jacob Cato Fund at zoomshare.com. So please go over, take a look at that, see if you can't help out with just a little bit. Let's get back on the phones, shall we? Chris in Rhode Island is up next. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, this is... it's ironic you should just say that, because that kind of dovetails nicely into what I was trying to think of. I sometimes wonder whether American culture, as it stands now, is worth saving for the reasons that you just talked about with that poor kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that the people who are in charge now are Nazis. I'm not even using hyperbole. They are. You can prove it historically.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a little over the top, but not a lot. But then there's all the rest of us who are just so comfortable that we really don't care that we use up more than our fair share of the energy on the planet. I mean, even on Air America, which I listen to addictively, I hear advertisements for buying gold and luxury condos. I mean, there's a reason why all these countries don't like us so much, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're pigs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to put that nicely. I mean, and nobody wants to address it, even us nice liberal folk. We don't like talking about stuff like that. We have too much, and we want more.
Yep.
You know, it's us. It's not, I mean, Bush is bad enough. I don't need to demonize Bush. It's true. But we got to start looking at our lifestyle, man, because we're killing ourselves and everybody down with us, too.
You know? Yeah, you make a great point. We are a a very consumptuous society. We are easily distracted by the latest shiny object and American Idol and scandal and Paris Hilton going to jail. And, you know, we're like very much like a lot of pigeons in the park chasing a piece of corn thrown in one direction. And we're easily distracted and a self-destructive culture as well.
Yeah.
Gosh, you know, look at Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine. Just a fascinating look at American, the destructiveness of American culture and where it comes from. You know, there's a woman who calls this show a lot and my other show a lot. Her name is Pam, and she's actually taught me a lot on these very issues about, you know what, you have to heal yourself first before you can help anybody else. It's, you know, when you get on that airplane and they give you that thing we've all seen a million times, they teach you how to use a seatbelt, and they say when the air mask drops, cover your own mouth first before you can help anybody else. I think as a nation, we're kind of in that situation where we're sick in our soul in many ways, and we have to find ways to heal ourselves before we can start doing the work of healing one another and hopefully the rest of the world at some point.
If I could just add one more thing.
Sure.
My family and I went down to Mississippi to help out with the Katrina folk down there.
Uh-huh.
And that was bad enough. I mean, I had never seen stuff like that. I'd never been to the Deep South before.
Right.
And it just speaking to some of the people was just their mindset was horrifying enough.
Right.
But what really struck me about the whole thing, despite the obvious need that we have in the country, is a half a mile from where this soup kitchen was set up, they had just finished almost rebuilding a luxury casino.
Unbelievable.
Wow. You know?
Yeah. Hey, where in Rhode Island are you? I grew up in Tiverton.
Charlestown, right by the beach.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call, Chris. Good talking to you,
man. Thank you, Jeff.
We'll be right back with more of The Molloy Show. Give us a call, 1-800-989-1480.
I would not run from the blazing light. I would not run from the spring. I'd see it as an engine, as old as me.
We are back, folks. That is, of course, Muddy Waters, recorded some 60 years ago, back in 1947 in Chicago, Illinois. One of my all-time musical heroes was Muddy Waters. Let's get back on the phone lines. What do you say? Gene in Sacramento, California. Welcome, Gene.
Don't remind me. No, I heard a man on several ahead of me, and I've heard him on several different programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only echo what he says about Dave Dionisi. I'm shocked that more people don't know about him, and that they haven't invited him on as guest, or they haven't read his book. But he has written American Hiroshima. He's right on target. He's an ex-CIA man. He's a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a message that everybody needs to hear. So I just wanted to echo what this gentleman said. And I've heard him on several programs.
Oh, great.
But
yeah, I'm going to track him down.
Dave speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's willing to go anywhere. And, of course, he's got a book to sell. But he also has a tremendous message. He's extremely, I just don't know anybody that any more articulate than he is. I'm having trouble because I've got allergies. But anyway, I just wanted to say that this man, and I've heard him before,
mm-hmm.
what he says is correct. And in him suggesting Dave, I applaud him.
Well, I will track him down. I'll get him on my show.
And I think you'd be very happy.
Yeah, I'll get a hold of Dave Dionisi. I'll get him on my show. Again, 6 to 9
Please
p.m. on the East Coast. And yeah, we'll get him.
He's a man in the know. XCIA.
All right. I have slots next week available, so hopefully I can get him in.
Good.
All right. Thanks, Gene.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Gary in Indiana. Gary, welcome.
Hey, what's up?
Good to talk to you again.
Hey, there was a caller, I don't remember, it was quite a bit, maybe it was in the first hour, who was talking about they couldn't understand why the Congress wouldn't do, you know, the will of the American people when 70% of the people wanted us out of Iraq. And, I think it's pretty simple. You know, these guys, they have to run for re-election. And the mainstream media does not report real news. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, any way you look at it, it's just not real news. And, you know, they magnify, like, you know, that like with John Kerry, the sailboat thing. The mainstream media blew that just, I mean, that was an ad that was in, what, 3 or 4 markets? And in the mainstream media, they put it all over every 2 or 3 times an hour.
Right. They give it all the free press, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
And, you know, they know, I mean, you know, these guys, I mean, they're smart. I mean, they want to do as good a job as they can over the long term. And if they get elected and then turn around, you know, I mean, you know, these guys, especially in the House, they just got elected. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to run again. You know,
yep.
You know, when if the mainstream media is out there saying, you know, all this stuff and that they're not supporting troops, blah, 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 blah. You know, they can't expect to be elected again. I don't care how many people, you know, are against the war. What they I mean, they're against the war, but they support the troops.
Right.
And when they keep hearing that the Democrats are against the troops, you know, even the ones who aren't brainwashed right now, the 30%. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And another caller said something about, you know, the apathy of the American people. I think we ought to do what Australia does. I think we ought to require every person who's a citizen to vote, and if they don't vote, fine them. I think Australia fines them. It's only like $15 or something like that.
I also heard if you miss, I think, and boy, if there's an Aussie out there who can correct me, give us a call. But my understanding was that if you fail to vote, like whether I'm not sure the specifics, 2 or 3 times in a row, you lose your right to benefits. You lose your right to health care benefits, retirement benefits, their version of Social Security, all that stuff. If
exactly.
You're not participating in the democracy, then you don't get the benefits of it. So yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I think that would be. I'm not absolutely certain that would, you know, would do the trick, but it seems like that they have a better system there. I mean, you know, if you have all these rights that which we're losing, but right now you still most people still have most of their rights. You know, you should have to, you know, do something for them.
Right.
You know, I mean, if not serve your country, at least you could should have to vote.
Well, how about you know, take a test and learn our take the same test that people born outside of this country have to take to become citizens. I think that we've lost so much of our sense of what a citizen is in this country. How many people in this country know the Constitution? Know what's in the Constitution? Can name the Bill of Rights? You know, the original 10 Bill of Rights. You know, how many people really understand what America is, other than you know, baseball and apple pie? I think that's where the founders originally said that essentially what was essential for this experiment to work was an educated populace, a citizenry who understood what it was to be an American, what their rights were under the Constitution.
And we don't
have that anymore.
And you're right. And if you think about it, you go all the way back to Reagan. And when Reagan came into office, what was the very first thing that they started attacking was education.
Right. Yeah.
And
the government is bad. In fact, we the people, you know.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. It was, you know, and they have tried everything in their power to dumb down our populace.
Yeah.
You know, George Bush with this No Child Left Behind. What are they teaching? They're teaching a test.
Right.
You know, they're not teaching critical thinking. They're not teaching, you know, politics, or not politics, but government. They're not teaching, you know, I don't remember what they called it now, but. I think that back then, it was like social studies.
Or civics, or, yeah.
Yeah, civics, you know, they're not teaching any of that stuff anymore because it's not on the test.
Right.
And you can't expect a lot. Although the simple fact is, you look at today's kids, I mean, you know, like Matthew that called. I mean, he's what, 16, 14, 15, something like that?
I think he's 17 or 19. I'm not sure, but check out his blog. Yeah, a stunning case of somebody who's actually at that age politically motivated, activated, and aware of what's going on. And sadly, he's the exception.
But I think, from my area, I find that more and more often than what you would expect. So, I mean, it's surprising to me that given the state of education, that there are that many young people who are actually, involved.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you listen to Mike's program Friday night,
all those young kids calling. Yep.
I mean, that was amazing to me. I was actually shocked that many kids listened to Mike and that they knew what they were talking about.
Yep.
I mean, I was surprised. I was amazed.
I got a 14-year-old who's pretty astute. I mean, he'll sit and watch The Daily Show or The Olbermann Show with me, and he gets it. You know, he understands the references and the jokes. And I guess him and some of his friends in school, they've sort of found their left-leaning group of friends and can understand some things about politics. But again, I think a lot of that has to do with the internet and kids out there just getting exposed. Even kids who go on MySpace, there's little blurbs and bits of politics that creep into there from time to time.
But at least it's there for them to find.
Yeah, exactly. It's out there. Hey, Gary.
I guess that's why they want to slow down the internet for every place that's not,
Yeah.
But thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call, buddy. Good talking to you. Take care. We got another Gary in Scottsdale, Arizona. Gary, welcome. You there? No, I don't think. Gary, I'm going to put you back on hold. We'll try you again in a little bit.
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Blink if you believe in evolution. The oil industry is really funny. 330, I have to put 337. It really bothers me to put this gasoline in my car because it is really something out of the Bible, because it isn't really real. Gasoline is not as expensive as we're paying for it.
Right.
Actually, if you could go out and buy Brent Sweet light crude, you wouldn't be paying $64 a barrel or $63 a barrel. The future traders and the oil companies have driven the price of the oil up, and it's all artificial.
Right.
Now, Paul Bremer, on a different subject, Paul Bremer goes out and loses 353,000 tons of cash in Iraq. Does anybody talk to that guy and, compared to how much it costs each month, it's not a lot of money. But does anyone go out and say to Paul Bremer, where'd the money go? What happened to it?
Right.
No. Do you ever read about it?
No.
No.
And he got the Medal of Freedom for that. Yeah, they were supposedly taking cash out of there in wheelbarrows.
Yes, they were.
American dollar in wheelbarrows,
It's unbelievable
to
think that what's going on. And, the Democrats and the Republicans, all they really do is call each other names, say, this is what you do wrong, this is what you do wrong, and Americans don't demand how they're going to fix it. We're going to make a better America. Well, how are you going to make a better America? Are you going to have a national sales tax and do away with this archaic tax system we have? Are you going to build more hospitals? No Child Left Behind? Bush didn't fund any of those programs.
Right.
I mean, what is that?
Yep.
It's not much. But in any event, Jeff, I always enjoy speaking with you.
My pleasure,
and
friend.
And thank you very much, and you have a very wonderful evening.
You too, buddy.
And
we'll talk to you real soon.
Look forward to it.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, I'll be right back. One more segment left. My God, this just flies by. 3 hours, and it just zips by. More callers on the other side. I've got Chris in Oakland, Michael in Sacramento, another caller I don't know the name of yet, but I will learn. We'll be right back.
I would not run from the Holocaust. I would not run from the bomb. I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into the sun. Fly into the sun. Fly into the sun. I'd break up into a million pieces and fly into the sun. In life, I would not run from its rain. I'd see it as an engine, as old, as interworldly pain.
Heaven's radio on the other shore. your Savior always listens in. It's the same old radio that was used a long time ago. For my precious Savior always listens in.
We are back. This is very much terrestrial radio here on the Mike Malloy Show, November Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. Hey, one quick shout-out to the good folks at www.democracyinteractive.com. A pretty vibrant, lively chat going on over there. And Daryl put together a great little site, and my buddy Sarge is a frequent chatter over there as well. So do check them out if you're so inclined. First up, Michael in Sacramento, California. Welcome, Michael.
Hello.
How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Jeff, you're doing a great job.
Thank you, sir.
Look, I'll be brief in consideration of everybody else. I called in because I just wanted to piggyback because I agree with it, what everyone is saying, you know, like about Bowling for Columbine and, you know, this thing with our leadership. Let me just say one thing. I recently heard on an urban talk radio, African-American, right, just in a discussion we're having now in our community about a need for new leadership, okay, because America is really starving for leadership on all levels. Yeah. That's obvious. And I think, when I hear people speak on your program, and Mike, I really think we do have a handle on it, and we just have to keep working at it. And I think we're moving. See, let me put it this way. If we were in the Hundred Years' War, any little bit of news would be good, see? But we're in a nice standard of living, so to speak, relatively. And, you know, the news we hear, we consider bad. But we have a long way to go. But what I'm saying is we're a violent society, and we understand that the Republicans, you know, they do hold the wealth. And rather than scramble between ourselves, you know, for the remaining wealth, we need to at least try to restructure things so we can get people in that care about our issues, okay?
Right.
And, I over the years, you know, I started off as a conservative. And, in my home, Chicago, you could get Democratic conservatives, Republican, because it's just conservative, right?
Right, right.
And then as both parties moved away from my beliefs, you know, my family, we've been in this country a long time. And, you know, we're conservative in our values, but we're liberal in our politics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I moved away from the major parties more to independent. I'm in California now. I voted Green, okay, on the local things. But I did vote Democratic on the national level just to try to get the majority, you know, in both houses of Congress.
Right.
But, you know, what I think is essentially, for instance, every day, every other day, we find someone hurling racial insults, you know, across this line that we have between us.
Right.
And I think we really need to have a serious discussion because if my point of view in my writings and essays, I feel that this issue of race is a national security issue for us. And I think that the fact that we're just one disaster away, a hurricane, floods. When have you ever seen so many tornadoes strike at once? When I was a little boy, bread was 30 dime cents, you know, a loaf, right?
Right.
The guy who said $10 a loaf, that's coming if we don't put the brakes on this.
Right.
Now bread's about $4 a loaf, you know, and it's the same bread. And here we find we have products imported in that contain chemicals, right, that aren't good. They get in the food chain.
Right. All the agencies in our government that are supposed to be looking out for us
they're
and protecting
not doing
us
it.
Are not doing it anymore. They've
exactly.
all been staffed with people whose allegiance are to the current leaders rather than the people they're hired to serve.
Right.
Michael, thanks so much for your thoughts. I'm going to try and sneak in one more caller tonight. Thank you. Appreciate it. Chris in Oakland, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, first of all, I just want to say as much fun as it is tune in at night and hear Mike rant and rave and scream. And, you know, I really like the way you're conducting the show. I think it's good stuff.
Thank you.
I just want to present you were talking about the Constitution and people educating themselves by it. I'm going to present you with a sort of a dreamscape hypothetical situation. And it's like to propose, what if all these school boards like in Georgia and Kansas that are so intent on getting creationism into our schools? What if they were as equally as excited about teaching their, you know, our kids about the Constitution, about the history of their country and what it stands for?
No kidding.
And, like, what if, I don't know, what if, like, all the money we spent in this ridiculous war that was just wasted, and you can even take out Bremer's money that he lost, you know? What if we took that money and we put it into alternative energy research?
Yep. A Manhattan Project for Energy. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yep. I was listening to Tom Hartman the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He said that if U.S. automakers were finally held to the CAFE standards that have been introduced and over the years and kept getting rolled back, if the U.S. automakers, Tom said, brought their CAFE standards or their mileage standards or their entire fleet up to that commensurate with Europe, we wouldn't need a drop.
Right.
Eastern oil.
Yep.
You know, but what do we get instead? We get a country in which more people vote on American Idol than vote for the president. You know?
Yeah.
And we get a country where people say, well, I don't care if they spy on me. What do you care if you got nothing to hide? Well, that's the whole point. You know, if people would educate themselves about what that Constitution means and how incredible and how still incredibly relevant it is after 230 years, it's still so relevant to our way of life and our society because that's the way it was designed. And the brilliance and the foresight that was put into that.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Hey, I got to let you go because the music's
all
coming.
Right,
I'm plugged out of time. Hey, I want to let you know and I want to let everybody know. I'm in negotiation right now with a gentleman who's a retired judge who teaches constitutional law at a local college, and we're going to do a weekly segment where we go through the Constitution article by article and teach our listeners what's in here. I want to thank Ian Huff. Everything you heard came through his nimble fingers tonight. Thanks to all the callers who participated. Thanks to all of you out there in Radio Land listening in. Thanks to Mike Malloy for letting me hold down this chair for the week. Thanks to all the good people at Nova M Radio. We'll talk to you tomorrow night, folks. Just keep it lit, as they say.